Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Shawley. It's Wednesday, so you're only here for one thing. It's PMQ's Unpacked. Patrick McGuire and I pause the action from the House of Commons to explain in real time just how bad things are for Boris Johnson. That's coming up in just a moment. First, as ever, we kick off with our columnist panel, and on a Wednesday, it is the duo known as Alibert. That's Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton. You're not swimming in the Serpentine, are you, Robert?
I'm not. No, I had to take the cat to the vet. That's why. That's why I'm at home. Yeah.
I bet by the time we get off this conversation, you'll have had a call from Times 2 saying, "Can you go down and try and swim in the Serpentine like Matt Hancock?"
That wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah.
What did you make of Matt Hancock in the Serpentine, Alice?
Actually, that photo. I'm always speechless because I do swim in the Serpentine.
Oh, do you? Yes, are you a member?
I am a member. I pay my 20 quid a year. And I do go swimming there, and there are almost never photographers there. And the idea that he just stumbled down there and just decided on a whim to strip off is just almost too much. And he just wanted one space in your life where you didn't have to think about or see politicians, and there they are. There are a few politicians who swim, but really, it was just too much for me. And actually, today I didn't. I just rather sadly walked around the park just in case if I went swimming.
He might be there.
He might be there. And there are quite a lot of Times writers who do swim there, including our chief leader writer swims there. And I think Poppy, who is also a member.
Yeah. That's the key thing. And was it Robert Buckland in the photo as well?
I think he was there too. I think it was Lord Bethel. Robert
who
Buckland,
is a member?
Who is a member?
Yes, investigations reveal, but not Matt Hancock. I mean, at least Matt Hancock's keeping busy while Westminster burns down.
Well, I think he should have been doing it for the Times, because then he might have been given, you know, he might have had a spray tan and, you know, had his hair done for it, mightn't he?
do you think this is all
part of me, Alice?
Robert, do you think this is all part of Matt Hancock preparing to launch a leadership bid?
Might be, mightn't it? I mean, they're jostling for position, aren't they? Jeremy Hunt saying, what did Hunt say? He would have to be.
It would take a lot to persuade him.
Yeah, which sounds like wouldn't take very much at all. There's a lot of names in the frame. I was thinking, Ken Clark usually stands, doesn't he? Is he still around, isn't he?
Is he in the Lords now? I'm not
he's
sure.
Lord, yeah.
I mean, it's been a while since we've had a Prime Minister from the Lords, but it's possible.
If you're desperate.
I know. So, yes, it probably is part of. I mean, they're certainly jockeying for position, as well they might be, because it's all chaotic, isn't it, still?
What's your sense, Alice? You've watched this circus for a long time now. How bad actually is it for Boris Johnson?
It is, but the rules are so complicated that it's going to be quite difficult. And they've only really got one chance, because actually, if they try and get rid of Boris and he gets a majority of the Tory MPs wanting him to stay, they've got to wait for another year. So,
although that was the case for Theresa May, and she won the vote of no confidence in December.
But she has quite a lot of integrity, and I think she knows when she needs to go.
Okay.
Do we think Boris would just cling on to every single rule and actually try and stay? I don't know. I mean, I think in the end, if the MPs really do, enough of them want him to go, he will go. And I think it's now what the cabinet say. You know, the pork pies, the new generation, obviously are agitating, but it's the cabinet in the end that are going to matter.
Yeah, there's a piece on Con Home today saying talking about the idea of challenging Boris Johnson. Shoot at the elephant and miss, and he may trample the jungle for a year. and that was just quite a good metaphor, Robert.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I mean, I thought the interesting thing is that I think the Sue Gray kind of tactic. As soon as she said there are not going to be any, there won't be any criminal charges. That seemed to me to completely undermine it as a tactic for kicking it down the road, because it just sort of started to look irrelevant. And I think that's what changed over the course of last week. I mean, a week ago, it looked like he'd bought himself enough time. Her inquiry was kind of rendered irrelevant, wasn't it? And then it all started up again.
And what about, Robert, because you did a lot before the 2019 election, you went to the Red Wall and so on. Suddenly, having held them as the great heroes who delivered Boris Johnson an historic landslide victory, now dismissing them as nobodies and pork pie plotters. Is that a smart way to treat these areas?
It's not a smart way to treat anybody, is it? I mean, I think you don't get people to do what you want by insulting them. And that is much more true today than it was even 20 years ago. You know, I mean, there's a very interesting line, somebody saying that these people are essentially unwhippable. You know, they haven't got that kind of atavistic loyalty to party that people did in the past. I mean, and that's true of voters. So why would it not be true of MPs as well? You know, people need more than just being shouted at and bullied and whipped. And that's what this new intake is. It clearly kind of knows its own mind. And it's also, I think it's also listening to its voters, you know, they're taking their responsibilities as representatives seriously, and they're thinking, people are telling them that the game's up, and that's now being reflected.
Yeah, it's one of the sort of, well, we did talk about a bit of this at the time, but one of the consequences of the pandemic is that they didn't all come together, they weren't all rounded up and told by whips what to do at the very beginning, and they've got a bit used to just, shooting from the hip and texting me, which is what one of them did this morning, not actually a Northern one, but a 2019er. Who said that, that all this stuff about how they're all stupid and nobody's and whatever has taken most over the edge. They're doing better to reach out rather than lash out. And it's an odd tactic, isn't it, to lash out at this precise point.
We've seen what happened before. I mean, Dom Cummings, really, I feel, is orchestrating a lot of this. And you felt that when the news died down slightly on Monday morning, Cummings came back in with some more information that, actually, if you really antagonise people and you they turn them into your enemies, it's going to be quite tough, isn't it? And at the moment, Boris Johnson should be hugging them all close. That's not a natural thing for him. He's not a natural person with friendships, or he's not. He's very much a loner. And the problem is, this loner doesn't really work when you're in your hour of need. You do need a few friends.
It's such a weird thing, because he does so well on the who would you like to go to the pub with. He'd be a right like we had it on our focus group last week. You know, when we asked which politician would you like to be stuck in a lift with, oh, Boris will be there. We probably have some booze left over and all that. And actually, in real life, he's a pretty friendless loner, isn't he?
I think his wife Marina had far more friends, and she orchestrated their life very much. And I think it's incredibly sexist to say this is all Carrie's fault. And I find it extraordinary that there have been pieces on that. But I do think that he was
organised. I'm not sure she's entirely blameless in all of this.
No, but I think that actually, Marina, his wife, was very much the social, together, organised one. And I think that Boris himself doesn't really have many friends of his own.
And I suppose, actually, if
he gets that kind of hunted look comes into his eye, doesn't it? And you think, this is not a man who is a particularly natural extrovert. He's not particularly clubbable at all. I've heard this from people who knew him in his former career as a journalist, who said he was a real not a cold fish exactly, but just somebody who a loner. Yeah, he operated. He had acquaintances and colleagues, but he didn't really have friends. He didn't really know how to kind of go about that.
Yeah, it's there's so many like examples of this with comedians. You know, people being surprised when they met Ronnie Barker that he wasn't blowing a tuba and doing a series of puns all the time because one was an act and, what you know, privately these people are very different. Well, we'll see. We'll see how we'll see how it pans out. It may or may not pan out, but we'll obviously keep across that all of the shenanigans down in Westminster. But let's talk about your column today, Alice, because you've focused on COVID fraudsters. It's a huge amount of money. £4.3 billion lost to fraud during the pandemic.
So I think that's what I think will be the next big issue. At the moment, it's all about fairness and parties and fairness and do you wear your mask or not when you're on public transport? What are you doing? It's all about small and petty rules and who's broken them and who hasn't. Whereas I think it'll go on to a bigger issue, which is a few people have made vast amounts of money out of COVID, and that cashing in on COVID is going to really rankle with people, particularly when you get to the spring, when inflation's going to go up, when taxes are going to go up, when people are really going to be struggling with their bills, you know, heating, everything's going to be really difficult, and they're going to come out of COVID and they're going to be far worse off and see that a few people have made vast amounts of money, and some of them fraudulently, of which, you know, 4.3 billion, they can't be bothered to get back.
And there were examples yesterday, Robert. It was like someone talking about how they were being chased for about £12 of overpaid child benefit. You know, the system is perfectly capable of tracking you down for a £1 on your self-assessment or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I was amazed when I saw that story. I was amazed it didn't get more prominence. That they're just not going to bother, that they're into kind of diminishing returns with the cost of tracking them down. But I mean, £4.3 billion is—it's not an insignificant amount of money, and it's not just that, is it? I think Alice mentioned it was £5.8 billion in other payments, plus all the issue of who got PPE contracts and lateral flow contracts when they didn't necessarily have to have any experience at all; they just had to know somebody. It feels like something the government ought to be addressing and didn't ought to be giving up on. And I think Alice made a very good point when she said Rishi Sunak could set himself up as a on a bit of a crusade to get this money back.
At least try. It feels like very early to have thrown your hands in the air.
Yeah.
And they've spent quite a lot of money on it already and haven't been able to. But the thing is, if you can get it back off, you know, struggling families who may have overpaid inadvertently, you can definitely get it back from the fraudsters.
Well, I mean, I remember, was it, I can't remember which of the benefits it was. Was it tax, child tax credit, or maybe the tax credit, where there had been overpayments through no fault of the person because the system was so bad and it struggled to keep up. Yeah. And someone, you know, had or hadn't told the system they'd done some more hours. But, you know, it wasn't.
Yeah. And they ended up in food banks.
Yes, and they
these
got
people
really
are ending
hammered
up
for years and years and years on this stuff.
I mean, it's an extraordinary indictment of the government, really, if you're going to go after the little kind of, you know, the people that they would call little people, but the people who really need that money and who really care and who are trying to be honest and are horrified, probably, if they think they have in any way done anything illegal. So the people who are actually doing something illegal, and that, and as Robert said, it's also the people who've just made vast amounts of money out of PPE, and then actually the PPE hasn't even worked, or have made vast amounts out of, you know, all the testing, and that hasn't worked either. That there's a sense that a few people just grabbed a lot of money, and it's a bit like, you know, it's sort of war profiteering, isn't it? It's that sense that you don't want them to make money when everyone else is doing so badly.
No. And when
it adds to this sense of you know, one law for them and one law for the rest of us. And as Alice says, yeah, I mean, inflation's already went up and it's, you know, 5.4%. We've got this, the heating thing is coming down the track, which is, I mean, that's the sort of thing that the government, that's the sort of thing that loses you elections. If you're bill goes from £1,000 to £2,000 a year, the average, and more people are put into what they call fuel stress, where I think it's more than 10% of your budget is on having to heat your house, then it's an incredibly serious issue, and it just doesn't seem to be being addressed.
Yeah, and I suppose, and at a time when Rishi Sunak is going around saying, "Oh, he really, really unhappy about having to put up national insurance," which is raising what, £12 billion? Well, a third, he could pay a third of that if he got this money back.
Do you know what? What I didn't put in the column, which I wish I had, is it's exactly the same amount that he says he's going to spend on levelling up. So you think, well, actually, that's how we could do levelling up, or we could double the amount we spent on levelling up if we bothered to get that money back.
Yeah,
yeah, the levelling up thing starts to look very hollow, doesn't it?
Yeah. Which is just another thing to upset red wall MPs, as if they didn't have enough. You see, and now I've brought it all the way back to the beginning. You see, you can't learn that. Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton then, of course, you can read them in The Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesbox. Up next, it's PMQ's Unpacked.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast now. It's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Patrick Maguire.
Yes, we are live on Times Radio, live on the Times Radio YouTube channel for PMQs Unpacked. Patrick Maguire, Times Red Box editor, is here.
Primed and ready for one of the historic installments. Perhaps Boris Johnson's last installment. Well, it won't be, even if he has to resign as Conservative Party leader. But God, how do you play this if you're Boris Johnson?
It seemed huge last week that we were expecting this apology for the parties that had gone in Downing Street. But to have someone resign, a Conservative MP resign and defect directly to the opposition, not to your Lib Dems or any of that nonsense, straight to the opposition. Christian Wakeford, the MP for Bowie South. Is this the beginning of the end for Boris Johnson, do you think? And we don't want to get too caught up in the hyperbole, obviously, but this feels like a huge moment.
It is a huge moment, because if you compare the last direct Labour to Tory, Tory to Labour defection, Sean Woodward in 2001, discontented with William Hague's direction of travel on stuff like gay marriage, etc. Quentin Davis in 2008... an MP everybody has forgotten, but he went to sort of give a positive endorsement of Gordon Brown. They were people joining a government that was sort of in its imperial phase. This is an MP saying, one, the Labour Party is sufficiently detoxified in the North, and particularly on anti-Semitism. Don't forget, Bury South has a big Jewish population. And B, that Boris Johnson, you know, he has a 420 majority. That is the bottom line here. He no longer has faith that Boris Johnson is an election winner.
And that's such an about turn, because that was his appeal. That, you know, for all of his faults, of which we discussed them many times, he won elections. He was popular. Well, PMQs has begun. They've just had a question from the Conservative MP John Bowen, which seemed to be trying to make Britain more attractive to young people, which I'm not sure is necessarily where the national debate is. If you want to watch along, you can join us on YouTube. We've got more than 1,000 people already, so it's already more popular than last week. Go on to YouTube, search Times Radio. You can watch along. This extraordinary Prime Minister's questions. What can Boris Johnson do? He's already facing MPs calling for a vote of no confidence. He's had one of his own MPs announce that they are defecting to the Labour Party. And Bowie South is one of those seats which was so crucial to the tumbling of the Red Wall. He only won it by 400 seats. There are plenty of other Conservative MPs in exactly this position, aren't there, Patrick McGough?
Yes, exactly, with slender majorities in traditional Labour seats or marginals that the Conservative Party won convincingly or otherwise in 2019. And if nothing else, this is a reminder that Boris Johnson's party management isn't very good. I've just been told by a 29 intake MP, Christian Wakeford, was sat in a room with his colleagues from their intake this morning and said nothing. The whips clearly weren't entirely across this. And the upshot is Boris Johnson is going to be humiliated. Christian Wakeford is sat behind Keir Starmer right in Boris Johnson's eye line. It couldn't be worse.
Here we go then. Question number one, PMQs Unpacked. Watch along on the Times Radio YouTube channel. This is a very, very gleeful Keir Starmer.
Position, Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I start by warmly welcoming... Can I start...
Listen to the Prime Minister.
Can I just say, I expect people to listen to the Prime Minister. I certainly don't want the Leader of the Opposition shouted down. You might not like the day, but this is the day that we've got. Yes, sir.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not bothered. I assumed it was directed over here. Can I start by warmly welcoming the Honourable Member for Bury South to his new place and to the Parliamentary Labour Party. Mr. Speaker, like so many people up and down the country, he has concluded that the Prime Minister and the Conservative Party have shown themselves incapable of offering the leadership and government this country deserves, whereas the Labour Party stands ready to provide an alternative government that the country can be proud of. Mr. Speaker, the Labour Party has changed, and so has the Conservative Party. He and anyone else who wants to build a new Britain built on decency, security, prosperity and respect is welcome in my Labour Party. Every week, the Prime Minister offers absurd and frankly unbelievable defences to the Downing Street parties, and each week it unravels.
I've been elected the chair. I don't need to be told how to conduct the business. So if somebody wants to do some direction, I'll start directing them out of the chamber. Keir Starmer.
Lindsay Hoyle taking no nonsense today.
Mr. Speaker, I see the very noise. I'm sure the Chief Whip has told them to bring their own booze.
Applause in the House of Commons there for Keir Starmer's not entirely unprepared
order,
gag.
Order. Let's try and get on with questions. It's going to be a long
Even
day.
Even Lindsay Hoyle's laughing at that.
Mr. Speaker, first he said there were no parties. Then the video landed, blowing that defence out the water. Next he said he was sicker than furious when he found out about the parties, until it turned out that he himself was at the Downing Street Garden Party. Then last week he said he didn't realise he was at a party, and surprise, surprise, no one believed him. So this week he's got a new defence. Nobody warned me that it was against the rules. That's it. Nobody told him. Since the Prime Minister wrote the rules, why on earth does he think that his new defence is going to work for him?
Here we go then, Boris Johnson's response.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, he talks about the rules, and let me repeat what I said to the Honourable Lady across the aisle earlier on. Of course, Mr. Speaker, we must wait for the outcome of the inquiry. But I renew what I've said, Mr. Speaker. But when it comes to his view,
clap.
Nobody believes what you said.
Can we have a little less? I want to hear this Prime Minister like I wanted to lead the opposition. I want the same courtesy from both sides. Prime Minister.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Speaker, if we'd listened to the Right Honourable Gentleman about COVID restrictions, which is the substance of his question, then, Mr. Speaker, we would still be, we would have been in lockdown after July. If we'd listened to the Labour front bench in the run-up to Christmas and New Year, Mr. Speaker, we would have stayed in restrictions with huge damage to the economy. And it's because of the judgments that I've taken and that we have taken in Downing Street that we now have the fastest-growing economy in the G7 and GDP, Mr. Speaker, now back up above pre-pandemic levels. And as for Bury South, Mr. Speaker, as for Bury South. Let me say to the right gentleman, Mr. Speaker, by all means, may I say to the right honourable gentleman that the Conservative Party won Bury South for the first time in generations under this Prime Minister, with an agenda of uniting and levelling up and delivering for the people of Bury South. And Mr. Speaker, we will win again in Bury South at the next election under this Prime Minister.
There we are. That was Boris Johnson. If you agree with the Prime Minister about whether or not the Tories can win back Bury South, there's a poll right now on our YouTube channel. Up to 1,500 people already. Can we get to 2,000?
It didn't sound like he was going to acknowledge Christian Wake until the very end there. And interestingly, I thought he was going to say... He didn't sound strong enough to demand he fight a by-election. That would be the ultimate test for a leader who was truly confident he could win Bury South.
And his idea of generations... It was 1997 that the Labour Party won Bury South. It was Conservative
Ivan
before
Liz,
that.
Yes,
That long ago. I mean, we should point out Christian Wakeford sitting behind Keir Starmer wearing a Union Jack face mask just to really hammer home the...
Well, as Keir Starmer said, the Labour Party has changed. One, and I think most importantly in this case, detoxifying the party's reputation for anti-Semitism. But two, that a Tory MP can defect directly to the Labour Party and sit behind the leader in a Union Jack face mask suggests that Keir Starmer's efforts to rebrand and reposition the party, tedious though it is for us to listen to and to watch him wrap himself in the flag, is having an effect.
It works. And yeah, we don't need to pick over all of Boris Johnson's answers. This stuff about how we'd still be in lockdown, I think it's been dealt with repeatedly by the Labour Party. They didn't call for a lockdown in December.
And indeed, if we were still in lockdown, Boris Johnson would still be having a great time anyway. So
yeah, he doesn't. That's why he doesn't know whether or not we're in lockdown or not. Just saying I renew what I said, and I think we had the first Sue Gray mention, which we'll keep across. Right, we've got a lot to get through. They're going to be as long as that. We're going to be here till about mid-afternoon. Let's go back. This is only question two from Keir Starmer.
Look, it's important I hear. I want to hear both sides, and I don't want this continuous chant. Because if we do, there'll be less people on these benches, and the same on the other side.
That's Lindsay Hall ticking off the Conservative
side. Both sides to be heard with courtesy. Keir Starmer.
Bury South is now a Labour seat, Prime Minister.
Order. Did somebody want me to apologise? No, somebody shouted apologise. I hope it wasn't aimed at me. No. And so we'll also have less from that corner, Keir Starmer.
That's Lindsay Hall pointing to the far end of the Conservative
benches.
Not
ventures. Only did he write the rules, but some of his staff say they did warn him about attending the party on the 20th of May 2020. Now, I've heard the Prime Minister's very carefully crafted response to that accusation. It's almost... sounds like a lawyer wrote it.
Boris Johnson obviously often mocks Keir Starmer for being a lawyer.
So I'll be equally careful with my question. When did the Prime Minister first become aware that any of his staff had concerns about the 20th of May party?
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to Ryan Overjohn for repeating the question that he's already asked. We have answered, Mr. Speaker, that it is for the inquiry to come forward with an explanation of what happened, and I'm afraid he simply must wait. But he asked about my staff, Mr. Speaker. He asked about my staff and what my staff are doing and what they have told me. And I can tell him, Mr. Speaker, that they have taken decisions throughout this pandemic that he has opposed to open up in July, Mr. Speaker, as I have said, to mount the fastest vaccine rollout in Europe, and Mr. Speaker, to double the speed of the booster rollout, with the result that we have the most open economy in Europe, Mr. Speaker, and we have more people in employment and more employees on the payroll now than there were before the pandemic began. That is what my staff have been working on in Downing Street, Mr. Speaker, and I'm proud of them.
OK, let's pause it there. Patrick McGuire, Times Red Box editor. There are hundreds of people watching along on the YouTube channel. Do join us on the Times Radio YouTube channel because it's worth watching this as well as being able to hear it. Lindsay Hoyle speaking for almost as much as the other two.
Yeah, I feel that by the end of this session I might have got out my Lindsay Hoyle impersonation, but it's too early for that. I think that was a ridiculous Nadine Dorries defence from Boris Johnson there, which just shows you how deep the mire he finds himself is in. It's almost word for word identical to the quote from Nadine Dorries, his biggest cheerleader in the cabinet, perhaps only cheerleader, talking about boosters, etc. And more importantly, it's not an answer to the question that Keir Starmer asked, which is one he can't answer without incriminating himself. And that's why it sounds so ridiculous. It's the only answer you can give.
Let's take a look at some of the comments that people are posting on YouTube. Somebody says, I'm just waiting for Johnson to blame the Labour government. Answer the bloody question, says David. Valerie says Boris is flailing a bit, I think. Same old, same old. I don't think I can watch. No, don't say that. Somebody else. Boris is quickly catching up with Trump in the line stakes, as Richard Moore drivel. Oh, it's too painful. I think Matt is going to wear that bell out. There we are. For every time he mentions the Inquiry, which he thinks is going to get him out of everything. Do go online and share your views. Go to YouTube and search Times Radio and you can watch along. Keir Starmer, trying a lawyer's question. When did you first become aware of concerns about the party? Boris Johnson ended up talking about how we're the most open economy in Europe. Let's see if Keir Starmer has any more luck with what is only his third question.
Keir Starmer.
So, Mr. Speaker, apparently Sue Gray is going to tell the Prime Minister when he first became aware that his staff had concerns about the May 20th. The Prime Minister's account gets more extraordinary with each version of his defence. If the Prime Minister's new defence were true, it requires him to suggest that his staff are not being truthful when they say they warned him about the party. It requires the Prime Minister to expect us to believe that whilst every other person who was invited on the 20th of May to the party was told it was a social occasion, he alone was told it was a work meeting. It also requires the Prime Minister to ask us to accept that as he waded through the empty bottles and platters of sandwiches, he didn't realise it was a party. Does the Prime Minister realise how ridiculous that sounds?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I've said what I've said about the events in Number 10. He will have to wait for the report. And Mr. Speaker, he asks for further clarification. I think lots of people who are interested, I say this entirely in passing, Mr. Speaker, lots of people are interested in the exact legal justification from the learned leader of the opposition for the picture of him drinking a pint of beer or a bottle of beer, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps he could tell the House about that in a minute, Mr. Speaker. But what I can
tell is literally laughing at Boris Johnson's face there.
Is that throughout the pandemic, people across government have been working flat out to protect the British public.
Flat out on the sofas.
Huge quantities of PPE, so we can now make 80% in this country, with the biggest and most generous furlough scheme virtually anywhere in the world, and the fastest. And by the way, Mr. Speaker, if we listened to them, we would have stayed in the European Medicines Agency and we would never have been able to deliver the vaccine rollout at the speed that we did.
I would say drink, but the suitcase is empty. Let's just jump in there, Patrick McGrath. If you are just joining us in the middle of PMQs Unpacked and you haven't heard the news, minutes before PMQs got underway, the Conservative MP, Christian Wakeford, defected from the Conservatives to the Labour Party. He's sitting behind Keir Starmer wearing a Union Jack face mask. Should point out that sitting next to Boris Johnson today is Rishi Sunak. He went missing last week. He went all the way to Ilfracombe.
Liz Truss has returned the favour there by flying to Australia.
I fly to Australia. Where's the furthest? How can I get away as far away from this as possible? I mean, we're now sort of in the point where they're not really... Keir Starmer's not really asking questions and Boris Johnson's not really answering them.
I've seen it all. Keir Starmer laughing at a dispatch box and looking like he's having a good time. This, again, is an illustration of how far Boris Johnson's fallen. What I think is interesting, if you compare this to Boris Johnson's first public appearance yesterday in that interview with Beth Rigby, did his best to seem contrite, almost an impression of a man who was capable of feeling shame and remorse. But now, you know, someone's put 50p in the back of their Boris Johnson doll and he's trotting out all the best lines. It's as a gambit for regaining the confidence of MPs like Christian Wakeford, the ones who are still in the party. I'm pretty doubtful it's advisable, to be honest with you.
I have to say, last week when we did this, the comments were not quite 50-50, but there were people trying to defend Boris Johnson. I can't see any right now so far. Everyone's saying there's just lots of waffle. Gary says Boris is not having a good day. Somebody says, where's Keir Starmer going with this? So every question is going to be deflected by Boris as a wait for Sue Gray and then used to reel off the greatest hits, as Sachin. But I mean, I suppose he's got to ask something. Anyway, we'll see how we're going to go on. I mean, it's now a sort of three-way triangulated PMQs between Boris Johnson, Keir Starmer and Lindsay Hoyle. Let's go back to the comments.
Mr. Speaker, if the Prime Minister thinks the only accusation he faces that he once had a beer with a takeaway, then Operation Save Big Dog is in deeper trouble than I thought. If a Prime Minister misleads Parliament, should they resign?
So, Mr. Speaker, let's be absolutely clear. The Right Honourable Gentleman is continuing to ask a series of questions which he knows will be fully addressed by the inquiry. He is wasting this House's time. He's wasting the people's time, Mr. Speaker. He continues to be completely irrelevant, Mr. Speaker, because we have an inquiry. We have an inquiry, Mr. Speaker, and I'm not going to anticipate that inquiry any further. What I can tell him is that it is because of the judgments that were taken in Downing Street and because of the willingness of the British people to put trust, by the way, Mr. Speaker, in those judgments, to come forward in huge numbers to get vaccinated, which people did, and I thank them for it from the bottom of my heart. People did that because they listened to our messages, Mr. Speaker, and it was a result of that that we now have the fastest-growing economy in the G7 and youth unemployment, which he ought to care about, youth unemployment at a record low, Mr. Speaker.
Can I just jump in there? There was a reason, Patrick McGrath, that Boris Johnson is saying all this stuff is because there are some Conservative MPs, wavering Conservative MPs, for whom that might work. I got the calls right on the stuff that matters is actually, it's got some purchase on some Conservative MPs.
It does, and that was the message Michael Gove, when he addressed Tory MPs in the 1922 committee this time last week after another nightmare PMQs with Boris Johnson. He said, listen, I've had my doubts about the Prime Minister, but he gets the big calls right. Nadine Dorries said that this morning. Every Cabinet Minister, still Lords of Prime Minister, will be saying that. And I do wonder, part of me wonders, you know, I can see out the corner of my eye Tory MPs, you know, goading Christian Wakeford across the aisle. You do wonder whether this stays the hand of some Tory MPs whose trigger fingers were getting itchy. They might write to Graham Brady. They might just be cowed into partisan loyalty for this and might be able to justify not going for Boris Johnson on the grounds that he's seen us through the pandemic.
It's interesting. I mean, on the specific of the question, Keir Starmer asking if the Prime Minister misleads the House, should they resign? That's a sort of standing convention. If someone breaches the ministerial code, including lying to the House of Commons, then they would have to resign. But we've clearly seen breaches of the ministerial code before where that hasn't happened. Right, we go back to the House of Commons. It's question number five from Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer.
Well, I know it's not going well, Prime Minister, but look on the bright side. At least the staff at number 10 know how to pack a suitcase. Mr. Speaker, last year, Her Majesty the Queen sat alone when she marked the passing of the man she'd been married to for 73 years. She followed the rules of the country that she leads. On the eve of that funeral, a suitcase was filled with booze and wheeled into Downing Street. A DJ played and staff parted late into the night. The Prime Minister has been forced to hand an apology to Her Majesty the Queen. So shame. Isn't he ashamed that he didn't hand in his resignation at the same time?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I understand why the Right Honourable Gentleman continues to politicise issues.
Sorry, Prime Minister. We normally would not, and quite rightly, mention the royal family.
That's another convention in the House of Commons.
We don't get into discussions on the royal family.
Well, in that case, Mr. Speaker, I must ask the Right Honourable Gentleman to withdraw it.
I've dealt with it.
Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer, are you going to...
So Boris Johnson's now back at the dispatch box.
Order!
Now Lindsay Hoyle's back on his feet again.
Prime Minister, we don't want to go through that again. I'll make the decisions. The answer is that the next question, I'm going back to Keir Starmer to ask his final question. Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Whilst the Prime Minister wastes energy defending the indefensible, people's energy bills are rocketing. Labour has a plan to deal with it. Axe VAT for everyone, provide extra support for the hardest hit, and pay for it with a one-off tax on oil and gas companies. A serious plan for a serious problem. What's the government offering? Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing.
Too distracted by their own chaos to do their job.
Yeah.
While Labour was setting out plans to heat homes, he was buying a fridge to keep the party wine chilled.
Yeah.
While we were setting out plans to keep bills down, he was planning parties. Yeah. And while we were setting out plans to save jobs in the steel industry, he was trying to save just one job, his own.
Yeah.
Doesn't the country deserve so much better than this out-of-touch, out-of-control, out-of-ideas and soon-to-be-out-of-office Prime Minister?
Yeah. Mr Speaker, I'll tell you what this government has been doing to look after the people of this country throughout this pandemic and beyond. We have been cutting the cost of living, helping them with the living wage. We've been cutting taxes for people on low pay, Mr Speaker. We've been increasing payments for people suffering the costs of fuel.
Prime Minister, look after people. Can I just say to everyone in here, our constituents wants to hear the questions and the answers. The great British public, the members of this United Kingdom which you're representing, they need to hear. Please, let's hear the questions and answers. Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, we will continue to look after people throughout this pandemic and beyond. But we've also, Mr Speaker, been cutting crime by 10%, putting 11,000 more police officers already out on the street. Record home building last year, Mr Speaker. More homes than at any time in the last 30 years. We are building 40 new hospitals, Mr Speaker. Gigabit broadband has gone up from 9% coverage in our country to 65% already. And as I said already, I think three times or four times today, we have more people, more employees on the payroll now than before the pandemic began. And unemployment, youth unemployment, at a record low, Mr Speaker. And when the history of this pandemic comes to be written, and the history of the Labour Party comes to be written, and believe me, they are history and will remain history, Mr Speaker, it will show that we delivered while they dithered, and we vaccinated while they vacillated, Mr Speaker. And the reason we've been able to lift restrictions faster than any other country in Europe, and we have the most open economy and the most open society in Europe, Mr Speaker, is thanks to the booster rollout and thanks to the work of staff up and down Whitehall, across government, throughout the NHS, Mr Speaker, and I am intensely proud of what this government has done.
Boris Johnson there, rounding things off with quite the greatest hits, Patrick McGuire.
Yes, nothing we haven't heard before from Boris Johnson. I was most struck, though, by a not inconsiderable cheer from behind him, suggesting that he hasn't lost his party completely, and nothing gets the hackles of Tory MPs up like a bit of red on blue. So perhaps that's his best hope.
You do wonder, it is interesting that whether or not the defection, what was now about half an hour ago, and we heard that Christian Wakeford, the Conservative MP for Bury South, had defected to the Labour Party, designed to be a big moment of drama at PMQs. But maybe, at least for this half an hour, it's galvanised some Conservative support behind Boris Johnson.
And particularly, I think, 2019, we've heard a lot about the 2019 intake of Conservative MPs. Who Christian Wakeford was sat with just hours ago. I wonder if it's a clarifying moment for them. As much as many of them will worry about their seats and be uncomfortable with the direction of travel under Boris Johnson, as Christian Wakeford is, I just wonder whether this might convince them which team they really are on in their heart of hearts. But at the same time, it may encourage them to think, well, God, if Boris Johnson isn't even flavour of the month in a seat he won in 2019, like one of mine, perhaps it really is time for a sea change, because the Labour Party now has a story to tell about the parties, about its own plans for the country and its own competence, crucially.
One thing that several people have pointed out is obviously Christian Wakeford's defection does mean there's now one letter out of the pot towards the 54 to trigger a vote of no confidence.
Yes, indeed. I have to say that's very well choreographed from the Labour Party. Great deep cover, on a par with Anthony Blunt looking after the Queen's paintings. After telling his university secrets to the KGB or whatever, I think it's very, very entertaining deep cover, knowing that Christian Wakeford knew he'd be sat behind Keir Starmer saying, oh, I'm so furious, I'm going to hand him a letter to Graham Brady. Great stuff.
Boris Johnson getting some support and cheers from Conservative MPs sitting behind him. And the Cabinet are out in force. On the front bench, we've got the Chief Whip, Mark Spencer, Jacob Rees-Mogg, Dominic Raab and Anne-Marie Trevelyan. And then on his other side, Rishi Sunak, who went missing last week in Devon. Then Priti Patel and Sajid Javid. So and Dean Dorris, I think, is just along the front row as well. So they're all out in force. The one exception being, as we discussed, Liz Truss, who's flown to Australia on a very important visit there. Right, we're going to stick with PMQs and bring you some more of the action from the House of Commons. We're going to hear now from the SNP's leader in Westminster, Ian Blackford.
Blackford. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This week was supposed to be Operation Save Big Dog, but it's quickly become Operation Dog's Dinner. Over the past few days, we've had more damaging revelations about Downing Street rule making, more evidence that Parliament has been misled, and an even longer list of ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous excuses from the Prime Minister. First he claimed there were no parties, then he wasn't present, then he admitted he was at them, but he didn't know it was a party. And then, Mr. Speaker, the latest sorry excuse is really the most pathetic of them all. Nobody told me. Nobody told me. Nobody told the Prime Minister he was breaking his own rules. Absolutely pathetic. The Prime Minister, you know, what a look. The Prime Minister laughing once again, laughing at the British public. The Prime Minister is taking the public.
I think, strictly speaking, he's laughing at Ian Blackford.
Nobody believes him. Will the Prime Minister finally take responsibility, resign? Go, Prime Minister.
No, Mr. Speaker, but I thank him for his question again. And let me just remind him that there's an inquiry that is due to conclude. I believe he is wrong in what he asserts, Mr. Speaker, but we'll have to wait and see what the inquiry says. But, Mr. Speaker, I think the most important thing from the point of view of the UK government is that we're coming out of the restrictions that we've been in. I'm delighted to see that that's happening in Scotland as well. That is very largely thanks to the wonderful cooperation that we continue to see across the whole of the UK, though you wouldn't believe it to hear it from him.
I mean, the most extraordinary claim I've ever heard from Boris Johnson. There's wonderful cooperation between him and Nicola Sturgeon.
God, halfway through that question, I thought to myself, things really must be bad if Ian Blackford is looking like an authoritative and measured parliamentary orator. And then about 5 minutes later, as Boris Johnson nodded his head and giggled at the lengthy oration we got, I realised that nothing has changed, really.
There's something about Ian Blackford's style where he says things that everyone's been saying for a week as if he's just thought of them and sort of chuckles along to his own material, and then it seems slightly taken aback that everyone's groaning around him. He's like Twitter on a sort of 24-hour delay.
Well, he is, isn't he? But he's quite a useful parliamentary battering ram for the SNP in that respect, because the story they want to tell about Westminster is necessarily a bit reductive, isn't it? That, you know, its culture is rotten and incapable of dealing with the challenges an independent Scotland wants in line with the wishes of the Scottish people. So, you know, oblivious though he is, his audience isn't the likes of you and I, or indeed Boris Johnson.
So just looking at some of the comments that people have posted on the Times Radio YouTube channel, Steve says, in the grand scheme of things, should opposition MPs be wasting time on this rather than world events, cost of living, people's jobs? Would we be in a better place with Starmer? I think not. So let's get some of the backbench contributions now, some of the real-world stuff. Let's hear from Neil Hanvey, a ALBA MP for Kirkcaldy and Caldon Heath, asking about COVID contacts after a veteran in his constituency took his own life because of financial debt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the cost of living crisis deepens, this government's priorities get ever more remote from my Kirkcaldy and Cowdenbeath constituency. Only this week, I learned a veteran in my constituency, James Scott, took his own life as a result of his struggle with mounting financial pressures. This is a government who are found to have acted unlawfully by the High Court over COVID contracts and now preparing to write off £4.3 billion allocated to those COVID schemes. Why can the UK government find billions of pounds for profiteers and fraudsters, but they can't find compassion to treat the people with dignity, lifting the benefits cap and reinstating the cut to universal credit?
Well, first of all, Mr. Speaker, I want to say how sorry I am for what he's had to say about James Scott, and this government does as much as we can to support veterans, and that's why we published the Veterans Action Plan only the other day, Mr. Speaker. But what we're also doing is ensuring that we support people throughout this crisis. He mentions, and I've said in my answer to the Right Honourable Gentleman, many of the steps that we're taking to protect people on low incomes, and we will continue to do more, Mr. Speaker. He attacks the contracts for PPE. Actually, I think it was an astonishing thing, at great speed, to be able to give this country 17 billion items of PPE, thanks to the efforts of people across Whitehall. Mr. Speaker, this country is now capable of producing 80% of our own PPE.
Kate Griffiths.
There we are. That was one of the answers from the opposition benches. Not specifically on coronavirus and COVID contacts. But Boris Johnson just rattling off the sort of greatest hits. Let's hear now from one of the Conservative MPs. We haven't sort of had an explosion from the back benches, from the Conservative back benches. But let's hear now from the Conservative MP for Burton, Kate Griffiths.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Shortly before Christmas, my constituent, Oliver Freckleton, was found at home having been stabbed to death on the eve of his 20th birthday. Yesterday, his heartbroken parents held their son's funeral. Oliver leaves behind a partner and a baby daughter, and two teenagers have been arrested for his murder. Now, this tragic event leaves behind a devastated family, friends, and a very worried community. I'm grateful for the work that Staffordshire Police is undertaking to tackle violent crime in my constituency, and the extra 149 additional police officers recruited is very welcome. But does the Prime Minister agree with me that a multi-stakeholder approach is vital to tackling crimes amongst our young people? And what can the government do to support not just the police, but schools, colleges and local authorities in working to address this issue?
My honourable friend, first of all, I'm very sad to hear the news of the loss of her constituent, Oliver. And like so many victims of violent crime, the answer, as is the case with so many victims, the answer is not just policing, though that is vitally important, and that's why we're investing so massively in 20,000 more police officers and supporting them with toughening the law, Mr. Speaker. But it's also, as she rightly says, important to get all the institutions of the state to work together, schools, colleges, social services and the health service, mental health service as well.
Jessica Moore.
There we are. That's Boris Johnson trying to focus on matters other than his own future. Patrick McGuire, Times Red Box editor, where are we now, do you think, for Boris Johnson?
Well, clearly he has not answered the questions put to him by the Labour Party, and they're also the questions his MPs are asking. Your bell has got to work out today, because ultimately Tory MPs, a critical mass of them, clearly, although we might find out between now and Sue Gray's report that some of them have snapped, are deferring to Sue Gray. And as long as that is the question, as long as that sword of Damocles is hanging over Boris Johnson's head, or neck, as he would say, as that's the original Greek, then we're going to be stuck in this holding pattern. And that last question and answer, you know, Boris Johnson talking about knife crime, that is one of the stories the government wants to tell. That's one of the things it wants to focus on. Remember Crime Week? I'm given to understand there's going to be another one of those soon.
Patrick McGuire, we are talking about Boris Johnson's future because of all the letters supposedly going in just before PMQs. Christian Wakeford, the Conservative MP for Bury South, defected to the Labour Party. In the last few seconds, David Davis has called on Boris Johnson to go. We'll bring you that live in just a moment. This is one of the things we haven't seen so far, is a really big name going after Boris Johnson.
Yes, and a fellow traveller on Brexit. Obviously, David Davis served with Boris Johnson in Theresa May's cabinet, campaigned alongside him in 2017. That is huge. He's certainly the biggest name to have called for him so far, and not a usual suspect, not from the One Nation wing of the party, an ideological fellow traveller.
OK, here it is. This is what David Davis has just said in the last few minutes in the Commons.
Davis!
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Like many on these benches, I spent weeks and months defending the Prime Minister against often angry constituents. I reminded them of his success in delivering Brexit and on the vaccine and many other things. But I expect my leaders to shoulder the responsibility for the actions they take. Yesterday, he did the opposite of that. So I'll remind him of a quotation altogether too familiar to him of Leo Amery to Neville Chamberlain. You have sat there too long for all the good you have done. In the name of God, go.
Wow. How did Boris Johnson respond?
Order, Prime Minister.
I must say to the Right Honourable Gentleman, I don't know what he's talking about, but what I can tell him, I don't know what quotation he's alluding to that he's referring, but what I can tell him is that I think I've told this House repeatedly throughout this pandemic, I take full responsibility for everything done in this government and throughout the pandemic.
Stephen.
Patrick Maguire, in the last few minutes, David Davis, former Brexit secretary, he resigned from Theresa May's cabinet over Brexit. Boris Johnson followed him out not long afterwards. Former leadership candidate, was a whip under John Major during Maastricht. He knows how these things work. He's by far the most senior person so far to call for Boris Johnson to go.
And he's done so not in veiled euphemistic language or in an op-ed, in a broadsheet, but he's done so in the most explosive and he's knifed him in the front, so to speak, and again, done it in a way that wounded him, although Boris Johnson affected not to know anything about the Norway debate there, which is very unconvincing for a biographer of Winston.
Explain for people
Churchill.
Your knowledge of these things. This was in a debate, this was in the Norway debate in the House of Commons.
Which in 1940, which cemented Neville Chamberlain's fate. It was the moment where it became clear that Neville Chamberlain had lost the support of the House, and it paved the way for Winston Churchill, Boris Johnson's great political idol, to become Prime Minister. So for him to invoke that specific example is a deliberate attempt to goad and wound Boris Johnson. And seeing David Davis and Christine Waite for bookend this PMQs with calls to the PM to go just shows you the breadth and depth of discontent with Boris Johnson.
Well, if you're just joining us here on Times Radio, it's been quite the morning in Westminster. About just under an hour ago, we got the news that Christian Wakeford, the now former Conservative MP for Bowie South, had defected to the Labour Party, telling Boris Johnson that he cares passionately about the people of Bowie South, and I've concluded the policies of the Conservative government that you lead are doing nothing to help the people of my constituency, and indeed only making the struggles they face on a daily basis worse. It set up an extraordinary Prime Minister's questions. Let's take a listen to some of what's gone on. First of all, let's hear from... This is what Keir Starmer had to say about that defection.
Can I start by warmly welcoming the Honourable Member for Bury South to his new place and to the Parliamentary Labour Party. Mr Speaker, like so many people up and down the country, he has concluded that the Prime Minister and the Conservative Party have shown themselves incapable of offering the leadership and government this country deserves, whereas the Labour Party stands ready to provide an alternative government that the country can be proud of. Mr Speaker, the Labour Party has changed, and so has the Conservative Party. He and anyone else who wants to build a new Britain built on decency, security, prosperity and respect is welcome in my Labour Party.
It's Keir Starmer there gloating about Christian Wakeford defecting from the Conservatives to the Labour Party. Christian Wakeford sitting behind him wearing a Union Jack face mask. Although Nadine Dorries, the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, I think, had tweeted saying, sadly, Christian has yet to realise that the Union Jack mask he is wearing to cross the floor to Labour is not welcome on that side of the House. Huge and overwhelming support for Boris Johnson from packed Tory benches, she said. Well, this is how Boris Johnson reacted to the news of that defection at PMQs earlier.
May I say to the Right Honourable Gentleman that the Conservative Party won Bury South for the first time in generations under this Prime Minister, with an agenda of uniting and levelling up and delivering for the people of Bury South. And, Mr Speaker, we will win again in Bury South at the next election under this Prime Minister.
Big cheers there for Boris Johnson. It should point out that the Conservatives won Bury South by 402 votes.
402 or 420, I can't remember which.
Not many, anyway. So, and it had been Labour since 1997. So that was how PMQs kicked off, with Christian Wakeford's defection. But who he, let's be honest, but most people in the country will be saying, less so of David Davis, the former Brexit Secretary. Who Boris Johnson tried a couple of times to get into the cabinet without success. This is what David Davis said at the end of PMQs.
Davis.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Like many on these benches, I spent weeks and months defending the Prime Minister against often angry constituents. I've reminded them of his success in delivering Brexit and on the vaccine and many other things. But I expect my leaders to shoulder the responsibility for the actions they take. Yesterday, he did the opposite of that. So I'll remind him of a quotation altogether too familiar to him of Leo Amery to Neville Chamberlain. You have sat there too long for all the good you have done. In the name of God, go.
This is how Boris Johnson responded.
Order. Prime Minister.
I must say to the Right Honourable Gentleman, I don't know what he's talking about, but what I can tell him, I don't know what quotation he's alluding to that he's referring to, but what I can tell him is that I think I've told this House repeatedly throughout this pandemic, I take full responsibility for everything done in this government and throughout the pandemic.
Quite the moment there. Patrick Maguire, Times Red Box editor. Let's wrap up where we are with Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson is still on his feet in the House of Commons. He's actually making an announcement about the ending of Plan B coronavirus restrictions, working from home no longer needed, mandatory COVID certification would end, no longer having to wear face masks in classrooms. All of that overshadowed by the extraordinary spectacle of David Davis, the former Brexit Secretary under Theresa May, former Conservative leadership candidate, standing up in the House of Commons, citing, as you point out, Churchillian historical reference to really needle Boris Johnson and calling for Boris Johnson to go. How secure is Boris Johnson this lunchtime?
I hate to use the word febrile, but that's exactly how it feels. After that moment, that David Davis moment, it feels even tenser than it did at the very start of that PMQs. It just, when you have a 2019 intake MP quitting to join the Labour Party, and David Davis casting the Prime Minister as Chamberlain in such a way as to humiliate him in front of his own benches. And then you have an announcement on COVID, which might have otherwise been, sorry, red meat to backbenchers, that has been completely ignored because the Prime Minister is in such a mess. I struggle to see a way back. It's a very, very narrow path to survival, even narrower than it was last week.
The big unknown, of course, is how many more there are. And does, as we were discussing, does Christian Wakeford's defection mean that some Red Wall MPs slightly panic and step back from the brink? How many people does David Davis is a big name. He's a bit of a maverick. How big is his, you know, although he resigned first from Theresa May's cabinet, it was a bigger moment when Boris Johnson did it. How many people do you think he takes with him? Does that outweigh nervousness on the other side?
It's a very good question. And I think certainly to some MPs, both of those moments will have a so what quality to them. You know, MP you've never heard of defects the Labour Party because he's too scared to, you know, last the course of 2024 and see if he can win as a Tory. So what? David Davis, old, irrelevant, never getting back into the cabinet, some MPs might say. So what? But I suspect, particularly with the DD, intervention, that is a signal, as you said, for someone who's, you know, one of the few people in the Commons who's been here for exactly three decades, who's been around the block before, who's seen Prime Ministers fall, indeed played his part in failing prime ministers, someone who believes in Boris Johnson's achievements as prime minister, it's quite the moment. And I think that might sway some waverers, particularly of his generation, the few remaining MPs of that intake.
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? We've now got big beasts who've been in the Commons for 20, 30 years and the 2019ers. And actually, does that just create a groundswell?
And it was very easy to dismiss for number 10 if you wanted to. If you're Nadine Dorries, basically say, oh, look at these spoiled brats turning on the man who made them. You can't really say that about David Davis.
You can say what you like about David Davis. He's not an effing nobody, as was as reported yesterday. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. And we bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcast from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.